Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, a Middle East Forum board member serving as chair. Today we welcome Professor Ofra Bengio, Senior Research Associate at the Moshe Dayan Center of Tel Aviv University. Professor Bengio is Israel's foremost authority on Kurdish affairs and author most recently of Kurdish Awakening, Nation Building in a Fragmented Homeland, reviewed in the recent Middle East Quarterly. Monday's ISIS suicide bombing by a radicalized Kurd in Suruç, Turkey, near the Syrian border city of Kobani, killed and wounded mostly Kurdish university-age student activists, a sobering event that highlights the intensifying conflict between the Kurds and ISIS. In neighboring Iraq, the Kurdish forces of the Autonomous Kurdistan Regional Government, the KRG, have been successful in capturing territory previously under ISIS control, much like the Syrian Kurdish forces have done in Kobani. The KRG is aiming for Kurdish independence and already possesses many of the trappings of an independent state. But the U.S. administration supports a united Iraq, and the other countries bordering the KRG are opposed to an independent Kurdistan. What are the realistic prospects for an independent Kurdistan, and what impact would it have on the region? Professor Bengio?
Good afternoon. At the turn of the 21st century, two simultaneous developments have been processes that reinforce each other have been taking place in the Middle East. The collapse of the nation state in the Fertile Crescent, Iraq and Syria, and the emergence of non-state actors which seek to fill the vacuum left by the central governments. At the same time, these non-state actors have been struggling with each other with a view to gaining the upper hand in these endless battles. The two most important non-state actors in our region are the Kurds on the one hand and the Islamic State on the other. With regard to the Kurds, there are some terms which we need to talk about in order to understand the whole atmosphere. We are talking of what the Kurds call Greater Kurdistan, which is formed, as you know, of four centers. The Kurds call Bakur in Turkey, which is the biggest community, the most politicized, and it has some 15 million people. Rojhelat, which is Kurdistan in Iran, the second biggest, but the least strong politically, with some 8 million people. Bashur, which is Iraq, the closest to independence, with some 6 to 7 million, and Rojava, which is now known everywhere, which is Kurdistan in Syria, the newest to emerge as a political entity, with 2.5 million Kurds. The most important characteristics that we can talk about the Greater Kurdistan is the geographical contiguity, transborder nationalism, and the emergence of Kurdish subsystem. As much as we talked about the Arab system, now we can talk about Kurdish subsystem. The important thing that happened is that we are had happened by the turn of the 21st century, while in the last century the Kurds were the most oppressed nation, by the turn of the century, and especially in 2014, we are witnessing a turning point for the Kurds on many levels. We can call them all together the Kurdish Spring. These are the crystallization of strong national movements, the blurring of geographical borders between Kurds of the four countries, especially between the Kurds of Iraq and the Kurds of Syria, the strengthening of transborder nationalism when one part of Kurdistan influences the other, and the state building in two regions, especially in Iraq and Syria, and nation building in the third one in Turkey, and less so in Iranian Kurdistan. We can also talk about war of independence simultaneously, both against the nation state and against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, and now we are seeing some influences also in Turkey. If we compare the Kurds with the Islamic State, we can see that there are some similarities but also huge differences. In many ways, the developments in the Kurdish arena in Iraq and Syria are a mirror image, albeit a benign one, of those occurring in the vast swath of territory now dominated by the Islamic State. Both the Kurdish entities and the Islamic State have swiftly occupied new territories, in the Iraqi case, Kirkuk, of course, blurred the internationally recognized boundaries between existing states, built new administrations, attracted volunteers, fighters from abroad, and this is true both for the Kurds and the Islamic State, and mobilized members of the international community to fight the big guys and support the good ones. The war between them has been ferocious because the Kurds and the Islamic State were vying for influence on the same tract of land and its rich oil resources. In Iraq is Kirkuk, and in Syria it's Hasakeh, where now the fighting is taking place. Because the two have opposed ideology and orientation, and because each sought to seize the opportunity for building a strong entity on the debris of the old state. We can say that the emergence of the Islamic State is a blessing in disguise for the Kurds. In fact, it has contradictory effect on them. On the one hand, the Islamic State occupation of parts of Iraq in summer 2014 pushed the Kurds to expand their hold on strategic areas rich with oil and water, and so they expanded their land in 40%. But on the other hand, the war with the Islamic State put in danger the whole Kurdish enterprise, both in Bashur and Rojava, namely in Iraq and Syria. This war forced the governments and the Kurds to unite forces against the Islamic State, but at the same time it sowed the seeds of future encounters between the Kurds and the central governments in Iraq and Syria. The war also enhanced transborder nationalism, cooperation and interdependence between all the Kurds, but it also increased competition and rivalries between them. We can also speak about deep change in the international approach towards the Kurds. In the 20th century, the world knew very little and cared even less about the Kurds. If we compare them, for example, with the Palestinian issue, so little was written and so about the Kurds, while the Palestinians filled all the pages and books and conferences, etc. But the war with the Islamic State put them all of a sudden on the international map. For the greater part of the 20th century, the international community indeed all but ignored the Kurds. However, the rise of the radical Islamists on the political scene in the Middle East put into relief the Kurds' important role as a main bulwark, maybe the only one, against the onslaught of the Islamic State, not just in the Middle East, but in the entire world. Realizing that with the Iraqi army's dramatic collapse, the Kurdish forces, the Peshmerga, remained the only reliable force on the ground, many countries in the West began to actively, though half-heartedly, to support the KRG. Thus, the Kurds emerged as the natural, albeit undeclared, allies of the West. So we saw arms supplies reaching the area, attacks against the Islamic State, and high-ranking visits. But here we must talk about the big difference between Europe and the United States. In my opinion, Europe is much more attentive and forthcoming towards the Kurds. Some countries, like Hungary, do not even reject the idea of independence, actually support the independence of Iraqi Kurdistan. Heads of state, such as those of Italy and France, came to Erbil immediately after the attack of the Islamic State, while from the U.S., the lesser personalities came to support. European countries are supplying arms directly to Erbil, while the American administration insists on sending them via Baghdad. And while the left in Europe is sympathetic to the Kurds, it is ironical that in the United States, the left is aloof, But paradoxically enough, as I said, they get support from the right. Altogether, we can say that the Kurds are game changer in the region on the political, social, strategic, and economic levels. On the social level, we can talk about the role of women. They are leading a revolution, especially in Syria and Turkey, in all fields, socially, politically, militarily, and also there is a secularism, separation of religion from the state. On the political level, the Kurds in Turkey, headed by HDP, have become an important player in the Turkish arena by managing for the first time in Turkish history to enter the parliament as a legitimate political party. Economically speaking, the Kurds in Iraq and Syria are sitting on huge reserves of oil, which has managed their internal and international status. The Kurds in Iraq and Syria are likely to change the geostrategic map in Iraq. They are heading towards independence in Syria, towards autonomy or federation. At the same time, of course, there are challenges like building out guerrilla fighters, a unified army, reconciling between the goals of different communities, especially between Kurds of Turkey and Iraq, coping with Iran, which has been strengthened significantly thanks to the nuclear deal, the export of oil independently from central government, etc., etc. But the main question that I need still to talk about is how about independence in Iraqi Kurdistan? We can say that in the last 2 months, a barrage of declarations by all the Barzanis, starting from President Barzani, Masoud Barzani, then going to military office, or the Prime Minister Nechirvan Barzani, Sirwan Barzani and the son of Masoud Barzani, all of them are talking about independence and that it is coming very soon. But while the Kurdistan Democratic Party in general and the Barzanis in particular seem determined to take this move sooner than later, there are still some roadblocks on the way. The most serious of these are the ongoing controversies with the opposition in the Kurdistan regional government, namely the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, Goran, and the two Islamic parties, regarding the renewal of the term of Barzani's presidency, issues of referendum and constitution, etc. Another stumbling block is the Obama administration sticking behind the elusive idea of a unified Iraq. However, the administration, so it seems, cannot stop the momentum that is taking place in Kurdistan, and it might be forced in the final analysis to adapt itself to developments on the ground. This might happen with the change of the administration in the United States. What they expedite the declaration on independence is President Barzani's urge to accomplish it during his term of presidency in order to associate independence with the Barzanis in general, mainly his father Mullah Mustafa and himself in particular. The timing might be also affected by the tense relations with the central government in Baghdad and the fact that it is dragging its feet with regard to sending money and military equipment owed to the KRG. Such short-sighted policy by Baghdad, as it has been applied vis-à-vis the Sunnis as well, might enhance the breakup of Iraq and the declaration of Kurdish independence. One thing is certain, going back to the arms of Baghdad is no longer an option for the Kurds. As a conclusion, we can say that in the 21st century, the Kurds emerged as a potent player in the Middle East. One needs to wait and see if they can translate this into political effects on the ground.
Thank you, Professor Bengio. Sharon, could you please instruct the callers how to dial in?
Yes. The question and answer period will now begin, and we invite your participation. And please note, when there are no questions in the queue, the moderator will ask a question. To join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you wish to identify yourself when your line has been unmuted, please do so. And please remember, if you have your phone on mute, take it off of mute when you're selected to ask your question. Again, to join the question and answer session queue, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And we'll take our first caller now. And remember, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line has been unmuted.
Hi, this is Greg Roman, the incoming director of the Middle East Forum. Thank you for joining us today with your excellent analysis. The question that I had regarded the different Kurdish factions beyond Turkey, specifically the political wings of the YPG in Syria, the KDP and the PUK in Iraq, and the Kurdish factions in Iran. How do we see all of them communicate? What kind of structures exist for them to be able to come to consensus political decisions of creating a federation that goes beyond Iraq and Syria and maybe goes to include Turkey and northern Iran to a certain extent? I'd love to hear more about how they speak with one another.
I don't think that you can reach consensus, especially as we are talking about four parts, which each of these parts was under different regime, under different government, and developed its own way, its own ideology. The ideology of the PKK or HDP is completely different from that of the Kurdistan Democratic Party. The Kurdistan Democratic Party's ideology is also different from the that of Syria, because Syria was under the influence for a long time under the influence of the Kurds of Turkey, of the influence of the PKK, and actually it's the PKK or the PKK extension which is doing the fighting in Syria, and this causes a lot of competition because the Kurds of Iraq want to have their people being in the picture, while actually it is mainly the people who are belonging more to Turkey who are doing the fighting. What we can say about the Kurds of Iran is there I think it's a missed opportunity, because this party was neglected by both by the United States and maybe other forces. This is the force which could have made a change in Iran, and but it has been sitting silent. As one of the speakers told me, is that they did not want to harm the Kurds of Iraq. They wanted first to have the Kurds of Iraq a state of their own, and only then they can, start fighting for their rights. This is one of the ideas that I've been hearing, but in any case, I do not think you can have a consensus. Competition will continue, because this is also a struggle for power. While Öcalan presents himself, or his supporters present him as the head of the nation, also Barzani, Masoud Barzani, presents himself as the leader of Kurdistan. So as long as they do not fight each other, I think we can be happy about it.
We'll take our next question now. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line is unmuted.
In the past, there has been... Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hello. In the... this is Robert Lewitt in Sarasota, Florida. In the past, there has been some contact and subtle support from Israel for the Kurds in general. Is there anything going on now between Israel and the Kurds? Is there any... with all the shakeup of alliances in the Middle East, is anything transpiring between these two people?
I think there are connections, but all of them are underground. This is the wish of the Kurds, because they do not want, already everybody blames them of trying to build a second Israel. And now in this sensitive timing, they do not want anything to be, you know, talked about. So, for example, I can only give one example when there is certain cooperation, is that while, for example, the United States and other countries could not or did not want to buy the oil which was exported from Kurdistan through Turkey, because Baghdad said that these, you know, this is illegal, Israel could do it because it has no diplomatic relations with Baghdad and could do it. And I think these are continuing to happen. And maybe there are, you know, in other areas, for example, we know that Netanyahu declared his thought that there should be an independent Kurdistan, and so did at the time our foreign minister, and our president tried to convince Obama to come forward towards the Kurds. So altogether, I think that there is a lot of common ideas and targets between our two nations, but for the time being, they are not talked about too much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take our next question now. Caller, if you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line is unmuted.
Hi, hello?
Hello.
Yes, Eva Kessner, and I'm wondering what role Iran is playing now since they're fighting ISIS. Would they be cooperating with the Kurds against ISIS, or are they fighting the Kurds because they're afraid there'll be a revolution of the Kurds in their own country? What is the relationship of Iran now to the Kurds?
Yeah, again, we cannot talk about Kurds in general. Of course, in Iran itself, they are oppressing them and they are hanging, you know, activists, etc. Now, the question is, how about the Kurds of Iraq? It was at the time said that the Iran supported the Kurds when the Islamic State almost reached Erbil, the center of Kurdistan. But of course, if they do it, they do it in order for them not to allow Kurdistan to declare independence. If there is a country which is so certainly opposed to such declaration, it is Iran, and it is working in order to abort such a move is to work by with the help of this opposition in Iraq, in the Kurdistan of Iraq. Namely, they are having the Kurdistan, the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan, or the Golan movement, to stop the move towards independence. These two parties, they are saying, yes, self-determination is our, you know, right, but the time is not ripe for it. And the one who is standing behind this is for sure the Iranians. So Iran is playing a very, as it is playing with the whole world, a very very interesting play, where on the one hand it supports the Kurds, but on the other hand it stopped them from going all the way to go extra mile towards independence.
And we will take our next caller now. If you wish to identify yourself, please do so when your line has been unmuted.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi.
Margo Einstein from Newton. Thank you for your brilliant presentation.
Thank you very much.
The Kurds, all of them, need arms desperately. Is there any sending of arms from other countries to help, or is groups like maybe Hungary or something, to any of the Kurds?
Yeah, this is what I said, the difference between Europe and the United States. While the United States insists on sending arms through Iraq, through Baghdad, when Baghdad does not want, you know, to send them to Kurds, or does all kinds of, you know, tricks in order not to do so, there are some other countries in Europe, especially, for example, Germany, or Italy. Germany, for example, is sending Milan missiles and others as well without letting it go through Baghdad. So it makes it much easier. But on the whole and altogether, the Kurds are less equipped than the Islamic State, especially after, you know, the fall of Mosul, when three divisions with all their arms went into the ISIL arsenal, and also after the fall of Ramadi the second time. So, in fact, they are very courageous, but they are fighting, you know, like the Jews at the time with very little arm, and it's only their courage that they, and their nationalism that, you know, make them still remain on the ground and not, you know, flee away as the Iraqi army had done before.
If people sent arms, which of those four Kurdish entities would they send the arms to, or is it up to them? Each one might get...
Yeah, I mean, it's only defensive arms which they are sending them. No one send them, tanks or aircraft or things that they can, you know, turn the war into an offensive one. It's only defensive, and still without the attacks from the air by the United States or other forces, they would not have been able, because it's, with such a difference in quantities of arms and quality, it makes it impossible almost to stay on the ground.
We are now at 2:28. This is Marilyn Stern. I will ask the last question, if I may, Professor Bengio.
Yes, please do.
Okay, so in a best-case scenario, moving past what the immediate problems are, if there would be an emerging Kurdistan, mm-hmm. the country is landlocked, and although it's pro-Western, and mm-hmm. has shown positive overtures to any alliance, potential alliance with Israel, even though mm-hmm. that's below the radar, how would they realistically be able to juggle the pressures surrounding them being so dependent in a landlocked situation? There was news that the Syrian Kurds are trying to enlarge the stateless mm-hmm. along the Turkish border to eventually create a corridor to the Mediterranean so that there's access to a port, but realistically they're landlocked. So truly, how much autonomy would they have in making political alliances of their own choice versus the realpolitik of the pressures around them?
First of all, they will not be the first country which is landlocked. You know, I mean, it's not Switzerland, but still there are other countries which are landlocked and managed to survive. Second of all, I think they have developed a certain relationship with Turkey, which they, what I call interdependence between Turkey and the Kurdistan regional government, which would allow them to have this access to the sea through the pipelines, which they have, built pipelines, oil pipelines and gas pipelines, and I think there are some 100,000 Turks who are working in Kurdistan regional government, and the interdependence is so strong. So I think that Turkey, and even Erdogan has, you know, hinted just a few days ago that the emergence of a Kurdish state, it's a problem of Iraq, and he is neutral towards such a possibility. So we heard from time to time certain noises from Turkey showing that if they have to choose between, you know, a Shi'i Iraq and the Kurdish country on the border, they might have wished prefer the Kurds of Iraq. And the point is that the Kurds are playing it very carefully and very smartly, and what they are saying, we are not going to separate by force, but we will try to make it through a nice divorce between the government and Baghdad. So I don't know how this divorce will take place, but what I say is the Kurds in Kurdistan of Iraq are playing it very well. Regarding the access to the sea, I think this is what they are having in mind. And the question is if the relationship between Kurdistan of Iraq and Kurdistan of Syria will be strong enough to enable them to move through the Kurds of Syria. We know that now there is the bridge which is working between the bridge of Semalka. This is the bridge between Kurdistan of Iraq and Kurdistan of Syria. It was closed for some time, and now it is flowing with economic relations going on and some military support. So we are talking on a completely different region, different area, and we must wait and see where this can move us. But I think that there is a strong, strong determination, especially among the Barzanis and their party, to go for independence. And they are lobbying all over the world about it. And there are some support even in the Gulf countries, even Saudi Arabia. Some officials declared that he is for independence. So I think it's the question of timing, and it might happen.
Excellent.
Sooner or later.
We look forward to that, and we reach the end of our time. The Middle East Forum thanks Professor Bengio for briefing us on a complex and fascinating subject. We also thank our participants for joining us. This concludes our conference call.